95.9 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. That was John Schneider.
He was only at 101 pitches. He had a ton left in the tank. What are you doing, Schneids?
Joking, just to be clear.
I got that. And I understand the tone of the question asked by Richard Griffin there.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand that, like, John Schneider's in a tough spot, man. Like, he's probably not likely to have a sense of humor about such things. This is his first and maybe only chance as a major league manager. And it seemed like an incredible opportunity. But it seemed like it was all in front of him, right? Mm-hmm. Takes over for Charlie Montoyo with a team that's, like, really good. Like, was really good.
Ready to win.
Had lots of expectations. And it hasn't exactly gone to plan, not only with the lack of regular season success. I mean, mm-hmm. playoffs, like, also relative success. I mean, Yankees fans would tell you you won 89 games and got into the playoffs last year. Way to go. But yes, relative lack of success. And the postseason success, there hasn't been any because they scored a run. They haven't won a game. God,
I'll never forget it.
But also that he's now, like, the face of the front office meddling, horrible decision-making stuff. It really, again, if you put thought into it, and I'm not asking people to do this, and I'm also just assuming, I don't know this explicitly, but talking to enough people, I think it's generally accepted that John Schneider, given his druthers, isn't doing some of the things that he's done throughout his career. He should be a sympathetic figure, and I want the pressure to be lifted off this team with a couple of wins to make the fan base atmosphere a little bit better and, not have, like, the tension be where it was seemingly yesterday before the Blue Jays came up with that big two-run single from David Schneider to expand the lead from 1-3. Also, just for poor John Schneider's sake, and I know that's what the money's for, he's making more than he's ever made in his professional life, and he is getting to sit in the chair as the manager of a big league ball club, but, like, it's be nice for him to, like, enjoy some success and not be the avatar for all things bad with this team.
Yeah, boy would it. I mean, there's a million things there. Let's try to unpack them all. I mean, from the first thing you said there, the possibility that this is John Schneider's one and only kick at the can here. And that is not a John Schneider thing. It is the role of a manager in 2024 is you want somebody that you have a good connection with, that you share a similar brain with, that you have brought up kind of through your system. That's not to say that he can never get a job somewhere else. I'm sure he can, but you look, and I don't necessarily mean that as a manager job, but you look at it as you want guys, unless you're going to go get your Bruce Bochy type, it's like you want a guy that you've kind of groomed to be ready for this position.
It's also a weird Blue Jays thing, too, because Cito Gaston never got another kick at the can, and there's various reasons, and I'm sure he would tell you a few of them if you asked him. John Gibbons, Charlie Montoyo, and then Gillespie's
a little different.
And, like, Gibbons and
Manager
Montoyo.
Manager of the year, though.
They have jobs elsewhere.
Did he win it? Or was he just nominated? Montoyo.
No, he didn't win.
Okay, he was nominated, though.
Is that true?
I remember him getting the votes and thinking, people read the stories about the bongos and the team had done a 180.
Yeah, and it's tough. I don't know how to evaluate them playing in multiple different ballparks of it all. But it's a Blue Jays thing that they have a couple of managers that have had success that for one reason or another haven't been able to get another chance somewhere else. But you're right to say that there's the occasional Craig Councils of the world, but most of these guys, you're right, because they are in the John Schneider vein, one, you want them to have an institutional knowledge of the players, which is part of the John Schneider appeal, like was minor league manager for Bo and Vlad and Cavan, knows all those guys, knows the system, spent his entire professional life within this organization, is going to take his marching orders from the people he has known for his entire professional life. So, if it doesn't work out here, there's no other franchise that he's spent his entire professional life with.
Even the Craig Council, like to bring him up, it's like it's just a completely different can of worms. It's got a long track record as a major league player. And, like, I don't say this to begrudge Schneider. We're actually bringing this topic up to say, like, leave him alone, even whether it's his fault or not to a certain extent. I look at it, and the other thing I think is interesting is that when I when I remember people getting angry at coaches in this city, forget specifically with this team, just in this city as a whole, it's sometimes it is a tactics thing or a lineup decision thing, but so often it is either a sloppy team or a team that we deem lazy or lethargic. And I don't think the Blue Jays haven't been pitcher perfect this year, but I don't think they've been some team that's been booting the ball all over the diamond. They haven't been making the base running mistakes, like, I don't know, getting picked off at second base in a playoff game, for example. They haven't been doing that. Those are the things I normally lie at the feet of a manager of not being prepared and not being ready. You're mad that the guys haven't been getting hits. He can't go up there and tell you when to swing. This isn't a Brock Purdy, a Kyle Shanahan situation, okay? So that's the thing I always come back to. And if you just are, if you're using him as the avatar for the decisions made, I can't get mad at you for it. But it does feel like all the stuff that you should actually be mad at a manager about hasn't necessarily rooted its head so much this year.
Yeah, it's weird. So he gets booed in that moment. Guillermo Martinez gets booed in pregame intros. Don Mattingly, huge ovation.
Like, why?
I mean, because he's Donnie Baseball. Donnie Baseball. But yeah, he's literally
the guy. He's at the helm.
Yeah.
It's the OC.
More than a few people, you know, tamped down your vitriol or tried to towards Guillermo Martinez last year and saying, he's the hitting coach, but these, you know, he's not telling them to not score runs.
You should go up there and swing at the first pitch every time.
I think that line of thinking is tougher when they've done a complete overhaul and anointed Don Mattingly like the face of the offense. That's what it is. It's not like it's offensive coordinator, but it's like figurehead of the offense, like all things positive or negative about the offense. And you know, I don't remember Guillermo Martinez doing like a media availability like
that,
like
was
Don
shocking.
Don
Mattingly yesterday
already done this season. And yeah, he gets to skate by because he is a former manager of the year in Major League Baseball, and because he's Donnie Baseball.
Well, it's also weird because it feels a little, and I don't think they would have thought it through this way, but it almost feels like, okay, here's how this is going to work. John Schneider, you're here to wear our mistakes. Don Mattingly is here to wear your mistakes, except Schneider still eats all the mistakes. And I have a feeling if this team starts hitting, it's not going to be John Schneider that starts getting all the praise for how great this team is. And it's not going to be him that's putting together the perfect lineup every night.
Yeah.
I have a feeling it's going to be Donnie Baseball, who's getting a lot of the credit there. He is in, he being Schneider. And again, you know, boo-hoo for him. He's a major league manager. This is all part of the job. But he is in the no-win situation right now, where unless this team wins and it is strictly just the most prepared ball club with great pitching and defense. But even then, we just give Pete Walker all the credit as well. It feels like there's very little ways this season can play out that we're sitting here singing the praises of John Schneider. Because if the bats start going, they've dubbed it. It's Mattingly. He's given, to your point, he's giving interviews about it. That's going to be his creation. And that's not true, but I think that'll be a lot of people's perception of it. And then if they start winning games because the pitching's great, it's going to be the Pete Walker story that we do every year, rightfully so, because he's good at his job. Mm-hmm. Like, it just feels like Schneider, there's no world where the needle can be threaded that we're sitting here having the exact conversation we just had about Sheldon Keefe, about John Schneider, where we're saying, what a good job he's done.
You know, what do you make of the media availability that Don Mattingly took? Because, like, we're so leaf-pilled here.
Yes.
And they never let the resistance speak. You can't even look at them. Don't look at them, okay? Guy Boucher.
Yeah, it's Alan from the Hangover in the gas station. Don't look at it. Don't touch it. Stop it. No, it's like the eclipse. You can catch a glimpse. Don't look right at it.
And I assume part of that is they want to be on message and they want one voice for the organization.
Well, a big part of it too is I'm totally blanking on the coach's name. Steve Spott, who went to like that coach's clinic. And then I forget what the exact quote was, but it was like a pretty, you know, not that big a story thing of just like, you got to coach these guys hard or you got to lean in on them or something. It was a very wishy-washy quote that should be nothing, and it turned it into a 37-piece story about how you got to coach these guys harder or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just,
a lot of boxing. It's I'm leaf-pilled, but also, again, like, I don't, maybe there were Guillermo Martinez one-on-one things, but I don't remember, like, what Don Mattingly did, which is hold court for everybody.
Yeah.
And be, you know, the news cycle of the day talking about the wavy offense. It is interesting. Like, is that part of his new role as well? Like, offensive coordinator, he is going to wear the offensive struggles or the successes this season.
I think they want him to. I just still think that there's so much, well, I was about to say equity, but it's actually the opposite, that's been built up by the key figures involved, be it a John Schneider, be it a Vladimir Guerrero Jr., be it a Bo Bichette, that I really think that it is kind of all set up. And I don't think this is some nefarious thing the Blue Jays have done. I just think it's the way it's kind of playing out, and there was no way to know this until you actually saw it take course. But it's just, he's going to get the credit if it goes well. But if it goes poorly, I don't think people are going to put it on the, you know, the Hall of Fame or the Manager of the Year, Donnie Baseball. I think they're going to put it on the guys struggling, or it's going to go back to the front office roster construction. Isn't it? I cannot see a world where people are looking at this. And I'm sure if you're Guillermo Martinez, you're sitting there going, why not? People blame me for it all the time. But I really can't see a world where, just given all the parameters here and giving all the principles involved, can you see a world where it's Donnie Baseball that's eating it from the fans? Because I certainly can't.
Yeah, it feels like the die is cast already. Because, you know, what has Don, like, no offense to Don Mattingly, what has he done other than be Don Mattingly? And he's already getting, he's getting praise. Like, he's getting applause. And, I mean, it's one way to evaluate his standing in the fan base. I think it's the only one we've got, and I think it's correct. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has the double yesterday, hits the ball hard, and is all excited, and that's cool. It's not a home run, though.
No.
Do you remember the date of his first Rogers Center home run last year?
I don't have it in front of me, but I remember it being deep into the year.
June 23rd. Oh my God. 23rd. It was almost July before Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit a home run at Rogers Center. Blue Jays had a bunch of hits yesterday. Ball didn't go over the fence. Mm. Where are you on the early returns of Rogers Center perhaps not being the bandbox we thought it would, and it actually being the opposite? And do you think, you know, the longer we go with Vlad not hitting a home run at Rogers Center, that this becomes a thing, that the pressure continues to build and, like, there's questions being asked of him? And yeah, the late June mark again being brought up and part of people's consciousness.
You play half your games at home, so it's not to say that you could just not hit a homer there and we're never going to talk about it. But I think so much of this the tenor of this conversation will be about how Vlad's going. And yeah, again, Vlad's going to have to hit some homers to have a productive year, but he is not a... he's not Adam Dunn. Like, he's not there to hit 50 bombs a year, and that's that. He's there to be a productive hitter who can, in theory, work great counts and is just lashing doubles left and right, and occasionally one gets out. I think as long as the slash line and the production looks what you would expect of the upper tier of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., then you can get by if there's a low or even a no home run total somewhat into the season at home. But if the production on the road isn't there as well, and you're looking at a slash line like we looked at last year, then yeah, it's going to get really loud, because that is an easy metric for people to look at. And again, it shouldn't be the way they do it, but when they close their eyes and think of that player, they think of him slugging. And I think this part has to be stated as well, is that when the Blue Jays fans think of their team, they shouldn't, but they still think of it as just this team that just swats bombs and crushes dingers, and it's not that group. Certainly isn't this one. So I just think that he's the guy who kind of wears that element of it, even though that's not necessarily the best version of himself when he's just going yard all the time.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there. I think the overriding point is that if he's just producing in general, that it doesn't be, it's not an issue.
Yeah, if he hits two off the wall every day, we won't care that none went over.
Honestly, if Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is a guy that builds an 850 OPS on the strength of like 20 home runs, but
and
yeah,
doubles,
40 doubles and hitting 320.
Yeah.
Like that's good.
Yes. Would you like to sign up for that?
He doesn't need to hit 50 home runs if he's hitting 40 doubles. Or hitting 320. This is a story we didn't get to the other day.
Yeah.
It kind of flew under the radar, I think, for people. Hector Gomez, who is plugged into all things DR, retweeted...
That's Dominican Republic, if you're not cool like Ben.
Yeah, correct. Retweeted a Spanish language interview one-on-one with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. a couple of days ago. And here is the pull quote from it, translated by Hector Gomez. "I would like the Blue Jays to offer me a contract extension, but they have not done so yet. Right now, I am focused day after day. I'm calm because no matter what, they are going to have to pay me sooner or later, whether it's this team or another. Okay, again, like, that's it's translation. Yep. So, okay, it's the tone is
yeah,
lost
the tone,
there,
that's
maybe. Because that's it starts off with, like, oh, he's sad, and then ends with, like, oh.
Or else.
Yeah, I'm out of here. It is interesting, though, to be explicit in that no offer, no contract offer has been made to you. And we've heard, like, conversations about maybe, like, initial starting figures or conversations between the front office and his representatives. Mm-hmm. Is it possible his contract uncertainty has played into the mediocre play over the last year?
I suppose, but... And, you know, you shouldn't, like, you know, watch other people's pockets, for lack of a better term. But it's like growing up being Vladimir Guerrero Jr., this isn't a guy who's been, like, sitting here dying for his Major League Baseball paycheck so he can live the life he feels he should live. Like, he's, you know, been comfortable. And I think that that has to weigh into when you talk about this. Like, this isn't Ronald Acuna who takes, like, the first big deal that's put in front of him as a Brave or some situation like that. The other thing with Vlad is I think it can weigh into it a little bit, but also this is of your own making. What is the contract extension the Blue Jays could offer him that he would not deem incredibly insulting?
That's an interesting one, because it's like, yeah, because to your point, he doesn't necessarily need the money.
No.
But he wants the
respect. Of course,
like,
that's the thing. He doesn't want he wants the money, but it's really the respect that comes along with the money.
But where is that? But he's also, like, he has to be realistic. And
that's what I'm getting at.
It's like, he's not making, like, Shohei Ohtani money here.
No.
Like, honestly, the way the sport is going, like $30 million a year for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., even if he isn't the 50 home run guy or he's like an 800 OPS guy, but it's not Shohei Ohtani with the ancillary money to be made off him, but there is some. Like, he has name recognition. Well,
he's not George Springer, like, quite honestly. Like,
yeah, he's young, he's going to be around. Like, is it insulting to offer him like a $300 million 10-year contract? Is that insulting? Am I insulting Vladimir Guerrero Jr. by even posing that as a possibility?
Insulting is probably too strong of a term, but yeah, I think you are a little. And I think it has to be... This part has... And I don't know how much this is, like, understood by other people, is the respect he has among his peers. And I don't even necessarily talk about the peers in terms of, like, the Julio Rodriguez, peers of this era, but it's like... You'll listen to interviews with Batista. He will openly call this Vladdy's team still. He is getting that stuff. And, you know, he doesn't, you know, we can be as down on him as we want. It's still very much Vladimir Guerrero's team, or at least partially Vladdy's team. And I think that that stuff is still getting pumped to him. And I think he still thinks of himself on a level probably a little beyond what he's shown in the past couple of years. He still probably thinks of himself as 2021 Vladdy, especially maybe he doesn't think of that of himself every day. But if it's time to sit down and talk contract extension, he still thinks he's way closer to that guy than whatever the Blue Jays are looking at him as right now.
Yeah, maybe. I definitely, here's what I feel pretty confident in saying, that you can very much insult Bo Bichette with the contract offer.
Oh, yeah. I got no qualms with seeing that. Easy.
I think Bo Bichette wants to be paid.
Might be offended by us saying that also.
Yeah.
He's kind of perpetually angry.
He wants to be paid by whoever the most. He's like Corey Seager. He's like, I'm better than that guy. And I don't know if that's true. He's healthier than Corey Seager. Yeah.
Getting the World Series? Maybe he is. I don't know.
But yeah, I think you can insult Bo Bichette by offering him an extension that he doesn't deem enough. I don't know. I it's really hard to know with Vlad.
Yep.
But if he's realistic, he should understand that he's not making $50 million a year. Unless he returns to the 2021 version of himself. Quickly, before we take the break, and we get to our good pal, Jason Bukala. This is a fun Leaf season. I didn't anticipate it being as fun as it's been, because it started off not so fun, because we had to watch John Klingberg,
Oh, boy, I remember.
Drag himself around the ice.
Yeah.
And Tyler Bertuzzi and Max Domi, those signings looked varying degrees of disastery.
Ryan Reeves, Masters leader, yeah.
Yeah, at least we had, like, the Austin Matthews hat tricks out of the gate, and you're like, oh, well, that it'll be, you know, he's going to have to do that for this team to even make the playoffs. Well, he's continued to do that, but he hasn't been the sole reason they find themselves securely in a postseason spot. They've been physical. Like mm-hmm. Ryan Reeves has punched guys in the face.
Yeah.
Austin Matthews can score 70 goals. William Nylander had that incredible start, and he might have a 100-point season.
He took his shirt off on that Swedish TV show.
He did all that. This is
the picture of Yarncroc dying laughing in the front row with Klingberg is among the funniest Leafs images I've ever seen.
It's just, it seems like an affable group.
Yeah.
Like, you got incredible stories like Simon Benoit.
Mm-hmm, the milkman.
Emerging as a star. Bobby McMahon, who, like, you forget about with yeah. the hat trick. Like, yeah. is this the most? It's not the most, because right. the most fun season
yeah,
was the first year where it was, everything was gravy. Everyone was ecstatic that Austin Matthews scored 4 goals and they lost the first game in overtime mm-hmm. to the
Except
Ottawa
Austin
Senators.
Matthews, he was apologizing yeah. to us, and that's what we do.
Is this the second most fun season in this era?
Yeah, I think it's hard not to be a little bit a victim of recency bias coming off a week where Ryan Reeves got in 2 fights and yeah. Austin Matthews can't stop scoring.
I know, I'm asking the wrong guy, because you're like, oh, I like the one where they played the Canadian teams all the time and I couldn't leave my house.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I know, it was so bad watching them just beat up on the Canadian teams all the time. Yeah, the end sucked. The end sucks every year for the Leafs. I don't yeah. know why.
Well, that's also playing into it. Like, there's obviously postseason pressure, but they're coming off a postseason yep. series victory, so it's not as dire.
I mean, it's pretty dire. It is pretty freaking dire. The thing I think that allows this to be a fun year, or more fun than in the past, is how different it's felt, right? Like, you've had different characters, but it was Ryan O'Reilly and Luke Shen coming in at the deadline, and Nola Chari, or it was, you know, Ilya Mikheyev, who is a nice story, but it, like, slowly built throughout the year. It was like Bertuzzi and Domi and Reeves just showed up on the doorstep, and all of a sudden, I don't know, it's like you're watching a sitcom, and it's like, oh, they got a new character. It's like, this guy's living in the house now too. And it was a very different feel to the group. I mean, a guy like Domi, he elicits the feeling that Kadri brought out of people for the first time since he's been here. And again, that's not to say they haven't had guys who tried to check similar boxes, but for everything Ryan O'Reilly did, I don't think he was quite in the same mold as that. It's been Domi who mixes that combination of skill and bite and nastiness, and he'll fight you if you want it. And again, the Benoit thing, I can't be overstated as well. When you have a guy that is just pure found money, he could fall off the face of the earth and not matter in the playoffs. And, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that's great, but it's not going to change the way anybody feels about Simon Benoit's season this year. So, yeah, I think they've had just enough different characters, and then the guys you've expected to be great have been great. So, yeah, it has been a fun season.
It's fun, and it's not over yet. No. Play the Devils tonight.
The fun part, and the yeah. terrifying part is down the stretch.
Enjoy the fun part, because, yeah, you're right. It does. It gets terrifying very soon. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about the fun part with Jason Bukala, Sportsnet hockey analyst. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. I'd like to think that it was Connor McDavid scoring 64. That, like, Connor McDavid only scored 64 because Austin Matthews scored 60. He's like, enough of that. Like, I can score 64. And Austin Matthews, like, 64?
That's it?
Oh, interesting.
You got that, eh?
65 en route to who knows where, but maybe 70. Time now for our Insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Let's talk to Sportsnet hockey analyst Jason Bukala. How's it going, Jason?
Good morning, fellas. Doing fantastic. Yourselves?
Doing very, very well. So I think we all thought that Austin Matthews was going to be great when he was selected first overall by the Maple Leafs. Actually, I should scratch that. We hoped he would be great, but it was the Leafs, and we're like, ooh, okay, hopefully this doesn't end in disaster, as most things Leafs do. But then right out of the chute, 4 goals against the Senators. I mean, in anyone's wildest dreams, could they have expected what we've seen now in, what, like, year 8 of Austin Matthews, maybe going to score 70 goals in a season?
No, I don't think anybody would sit there and say that they, I mean, you always hope that there's going to be a superstar like that on the horizon, right? It's fun for the game. It's good for the league. It's good for the franchise, great for the fan base. But, I mean, he just keeps going and going. So it's, I enjoy watching it just like everybody else. And, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because pucks go in for this guy that you take a look at it and you're like, geez, I don't know, could you stop that? But at the same time, they just keep going in. Like, he scores his 50th from, like, the goal line. He scores last night from long distance off his back foot. And he's got a special knack for it. There's no doubt.
Yeah, that was just as weird a shot release as I've seen from him. And like you said, we've seen him take just about every tact of finding a way to put it in the back of the net. But yeah, that was certainly a unique one in and of itself. I just want to ask you about the kind of compete we saw in that game last night. I mean, obviously you're seeing it in spades from the Pens and Sidney Crosby last night. That is a playoff game for them. They've been playing in playoff games for a month, and they hope to continue to do so if this run goes well for them. You know, we talk a lot about the Leafs being tested at this time of year, and, you know, it'll be a little bit of a different animal tonight against the Devils, but just how do you feel the Leafs were kind of pushed in that game with the compete that the Penguins showed?
Yeah, I thought that they responded relatively well. You know, absolutely the Pens gave them, you know, if you look at the shot attempts in the game, never mind what they ended up on shots on net, but Pittsburgh was really pushing. Like, that is the absolute best version of the Penguins that you're going to get out of them. And certain guys, I'm not so much concerned about, you know, how the Matthews, well, I am come playoffs time. Obviously, I want him to go to, and, you know, hopefully another level come playoffs, never mind regular season. But certain guys in the Leafs continue to evolve, don't they? Like, Benoit played over 22 minutes last night, guys. And I don't think that we would have been sitting here, you know, ever, really, thinking that come April, Simon Benoit was going to be a 22-minute-a-night guy for the Leafs, and seven hits, I think two or three block shots. So really nice things going on with the Leafs in certain categories. And I do feel different. You know, I just had a long debate with Luke Gazzik last week just in the studio. And I do feel different about the team this year in terms of, like, last year, the trade deadline, I felt like we beefed up and we tried to prove to everybody that we can play a certain style. I feel like right now they've evolved as the season's gone on, and they have a different feel about the group that feels better going into playoffs. I'm not suggesting they're going to have a deep run. You know, we'll see. It's going to be hard, but certainly the group feels better from a compete perspective.
Yeah, just sticking on Benoit for a second there. I mean, it's always interesting when a guy kind of comes out of nowhere to, you know, take, I mean, no one's given it to him. He's taken it, a prominent position on this team. We've been sitting here all for since the deadline, but even before then, going, what is the pair the Leafs are going to trust? Are we overthinking this, that it's just going to be, that it's not going to be Simone Benoit and Jake McCabe? I mean, I feel like when push comes to shove, that is the pair that Sheldon Keefe is most often put together and trusts. I suppose a healthy Joel Edmondson maybe changes that, and you want him alongside McCabe, but I just feel like we've seen such a body of work from McCabe and Benoit that, no, they're not a perfect pair, far from it, but for what the Leafs have, I think it's as good a shutdown pair as you're going to be able to build. Do you feel differently?
No, I agree with that. 100% I agree with that. I mean, even if Edmondson comes back, you know, you've got something going there now, and we're really close to the end that you feel like you can trust, and you know what you're going to get out of the two. McCabe, don't forget, started the year kind of running around a lot, guys, like, you know, chasing checks, chasing contact, and, you know, he's settled down that way, and certainly having Benoit on the flank is complimentary to him. So I like it. I don't think you mess around with it, no matter what happens here with Edmondson coming, you know, hopefully back into the lineup sooner than later. But mm-hmm. Edmondson's had a hard time staying healthy, and you know, you ride the wave of what's going well, and there's no reason for the Benoit and McCabe thing to get split up, in my estimation.
Yeah, one of the key selling features about Joel Edmondson when he was acquired at the deadline was that the penalty kill, which has been good without him. It's also gotten some saves, and I don't know how you separate the goaltending from the results that the PK is having, but just, you know, from what you're seeing, are there the real changes? Like, is there reason to believe that this has staying power, what the Maple Leafs have done shorthanded recently?
Great question. And I wish I could just say yes. I don't know that I can. I think that your goaltender obviously has to be your best penalty killer, and they've got some timely saves, and Samsonov, like, you know, Samsonov last night, same thing. You know, it's been better, and there's been more buy-in, I guess, across the board. But you got to have some puck luck, and you have to get saves. I don't know that strategically much has changed. I think that it's just a stretch of better luck a little bit. But certainly when you, again, going back to guys like Benoit, McCabe, whatever, whoever you roll out there on the penalty kill, you know, Marner's back in the lineup now. He'll take a role in there. It's just going to be commitment, right? You got to, it's that extra half step. It's that extra momentum getting into the lane. And then it's that extra desperation stop. So when it's good, it's good. And sometimes it doesn't look like it changes at all, like the system, and the puck still goes in the net. So we'll see, but it definitely has to operate over 80% guys come playoffs.
Yeah, one of the guys who has been, you know, I don't want to overstate it, but he has been a fairly key cog since he's been brought over at the deadline is Connor Dewar. But it seems like with the emergence of Ryan Reeves, that's the kind of guy on the who's the odd man out if Yarncroc comes back into the lineup. It doesn't help Dewar's case that Yarncroc is also a guy you trust in penalty kill spots, but we know that the Dewar has the utility to kind of switch over to center. It's possible that Yarncroc's not healthy, and this is a moot point, but if it does come down to that decision for the Leafs for kind of the 12th forward spot, and maybe you don't see it coming down to a decision between Yarncroc and Dewar, but that's where I see it. How do you think Keefe would kind of lean at the guy in Dewar who's been doing all this, but Yarncroc is obviously somebody he just trusts in spades?
Yeah, I think, you know, you said it yourself, it's going to come down to health. It's going to come down to execution and practice, what they're seeing in practice, you know, fitness wise, let's not forget that part too. But, you know, come playoffs, if you are lucky enough, like if they're going to play Florida, it looks like they're going to play Florida, it's going to be a rough and tumble type of series. Like Florida is going to wear you down. And, you know, is Connor Dewar able to handle that? Is Yarncroc healthy enough to handle that? There's a lot of questions that way. This is a good problem. If you ever are going to go on a run in playoffs, let's just say they catch lightning in a bottle here, you're going to need 13 forwards at least, sometimes 14, mm-hmm. and you're definitely going to need at least 7 defensemen. So it's a nice problem to have choices, I guess. There are some teams in the league, believe it or not, that don't have those types of choices. So this is competition's a good thing internally, but I see where you're going with it. I think they go with the veteran guy to start if he's healthy.
Mm. So we've continued to see Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner separated on two separate lines. And shout out to your dog.
He's just saying hello to, you know, everybody here.
Yeah. Nothing like it at 7:45 in the morning, dog barking. So we've got three separate lines with the core four guys spread out amongst them. How likely do you think that is that continues into the postseason?
Interesting. Again, I'm going to lean on strategy, similar to what Edmonton's done recently, you know, loading up their top line there with Draisaitl, McDavid, with Hyman. I think it's going to be situational. Nylander, splitting it up the way that it is right now, you can see how he's trying to balance things out. But listen, if you're chasing a game come playoff time, there is no tomorrow. So you got to do what you got to do. And that is load up your top six. If they're in control of the situation and the strategy's working, fine, keep it the way it is. But, the good news here is that Matthews just keeps going, right? Like he just keeps scoring. Bobby McMahon is complimenting people up and down the lineup, which is another good news story. Like he can play in the three. He's not a one. Neither is Nye's a one right now, but you know, they can play these roles and extend plays and provide some energy. So on balance, they become harder to check that way, which is a good news story. But I find it hard to believe that we won't see them back together for fits and starts and playoffs.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. And honestly, I'm happy you bring up the McMahon and Nye's point there. And, you know, Nye's was here last year, and I suppose McMahon kind of filtered about a little bit, but they're obviously much more prominent members of the team this year. And, you know, you throw in Domi and Bertuzzi. It's nice to say you want to spread out the talent, but there's not a ton of point in having a William Nylander on a third line if it's, you know, no offense to Kampf and Dewar, but if it's Kampf and Dewar, he's doing it with. Like, you need those complimentary guys to be able to spread the talent out, and I think that's something we maybe kind of overstate when we've wanted it in the past, that you see it now this year, that they actually have the kind of ability to do that. They got two games this week, the next two, against the Devils here, a home and home. Very different challenge than a Penguins team. Not that the Devils aren't pushing for the playoffs, but this is and Sidney Crosby staring you down on the other side of things. What do you think Sheldon Keefe wants to see? Is it just about playing as mature, responsible, a button-down game? Because we know this Devils team, you know, they want to play responsible too, but the second they get an inkling of space, they want to run and kind of play fire wagon hockey. Is the test in these next two games for the Leafs really just kind of showing their, and this is a word Sheldon Keefe used a couple weeks ago, or kind of showing their maturity in these games?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, let's not forget when New Jersey came to town, what happened last time, right? So I think that you have to reflect upon that. New Jersey is a good test. Even though they're not a playoff team, they've got some noise around them that guys are, like the coach is auditioning to be the full-time permanent head coach for next year, for example. They got some young guys there. You know, the goaltending, you know, was what it was. Now you got Jake Allen there. They have some things to prove here down the stretch. So although they're out of it, I think this is a good opponent for the Leafs. And they have to stick with the process. They are going to run into some teams in playoffs, if they're lucky, to go beyond the first round, that they button it up in the neutral zone and they're hard to get, you know, get past and transition through the neutral zone. New Jersey's good that way. And then, of course, they hit it up ice against you in a hurry. So this is a good test. It's fine. As a matter of fact, I would say that these two games here are more important on balance than the final two, because I feel like the final two were going to be like staring down the barrel of, you know, 14 minutes from Austin Matthews, you know what I mean, with those opponents. So it won't be easy, fellas. It's a good test. It's good to keep the structure in place.
Well, and if it is, you know, the you know, if those final two games do not resemble anything like the previous 80, and that's all we have to see of Timothy Liljegren, which actually might be like optimistic, him playing in any regular season games, how does that impact, in your mind, his availability or the potential for him to be in the game one lineup if that's the only sample we have of him returning from injury?
Way too risky to have him in the lineup in game one. He was, in my estimation, he was competing for a position even before he, you know, went down. So, you know, guys, again, like Benoit, who are you going to take out? I mean, that's just a simple question. Who are you going to take out? It's the hardest time of year. Were you trusting his process enough at that time to say, okay, he's got a for sure spot to begin with? My answer is no. So he's an extra to start.
Yeah, it seems like the way it's trending. Jason, always a pleasure. Thanks for this.
Always, fellas. Enjoy the day. Thanks for having me on.
All right, you too. Jason Bukala, Sportsnet hockey analyst and our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. What a bunch of twists and turns it has been for Timothy Liljegren this season, who is going to head into restricted free agency with arbitration rights at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And we thought we would know a lot more about his standing within this organization.
Yep.
But what if he doesn't play another regular season game, or he does, and it's like he's still out of the postseason lineup? And Jason's right. Yeah, it's 7 defensemen. You need 8, 9, 10, 45 defensemen.
387.
So he'll probably get into, and especially if the Leafs go on some extended postseason run, he'll see some time.
You only need to knock on wood when you're jinxing a thing that could happen.
Yeah. He'll probably see some time in the postseason, but it's hard to imagine him being in the elevated role that we were envisioning him when he was healthy. Like, what? Yeah, it's like it'll be interesting to evaluate where he is with this organization at the end of this postseason run.
It'll be fascinating to see. I don't think it's a super easy roadmap, but I also think that given the returns that we've seen from this Leafs blue line, we actually spent the first 20 minutes of the show talking about the Jays, but when we started talking about the Leafs, a big chunk of it was about Labushkin, the right shot D, who is struggling, and now, don't get me wrong, I don't want to see a Timothy Liljegren, Morgan Rielly pair. I've seen that before, and my eyes have not recovered from the bleach I poured on them to get that away from my eyes. But I don't think that I don't think it's going to be overly hard for him to work his way back in. Not to say at the end of the season, like, I do think it'd be tough, but the Leafs are not, and hey, this, feel free to prove me wrong, they're not just going to go choke the life out of Florida in 5 games where there's no questions about the lineup through the first couple. He's going to get in, even if he doesn't start in. And I think that he's going to have every opportunity, because he was building a lot of trust with Keefe, especially if it ends up being some type of, let's just say it is Benoit McCabe, and then it ends up being Edmondson Liljegren when he's healthy. It's like, I don't know, it feels like a pair to me that Keefe is going to trust a fair amount. And then you have Rielly Labushkin up top. Again, don't take what I'm saying to say, I love the Leafs blue line, it's perfect, this is how I would construct my cup team. No, it's not. We've had this conversation a million times, but I think that Liljegren, especially given the options around him, he's going to have the opportunity to show the strides he's made.
Yeah, he'll have the opportunity, but I think like the Cali Yarncroc thing is more like, if Cali Yarncroc is healthy, like that's a guy you want in the lineup.
Big time.
But like, where does he fit, right? And he's right-hand shot, but he's played on the left side before.
I told you, I've been doing the lines, and I don't know what to do because Bobby McMahon exists.
Yeah, I'm not taking Bobby McMahon out of the lineup.
Oh, God, no.
I might take Matthew Nyes out of the lineup.
The problem with taking him out is that it's what I mentioned there with Bukla, is that he is one of those middle six complimentary guys that you can see complimenting a Matthews, a Marner, a Nylander more than you can, say, a Yarncroc potentially.
Is that true, though?
No,
Yarncroc in that
it's
spot.
It's dependent on the player. It's dependent on how they're going. That one is enough of an open competition. I think the other thing with Dewar, that's why I keep going back to Dewar, is because it's the penalty kill thing. The reason he's in is because he can kill penalties. Yeah. But Yarncroc
He doesn't have the offensive upside that Yarncroc has.
And Yarncroc was the most trusted penalty killer of all the forwards, and maybe not most trusted, but most used of all the winger forwards anyways. So I can't see a world where you don't get him back.
It's probably the easiest fit, right, is taking out Connor Dewar.
Yeah, but it does. But you can't overstate what him playing center means. Mm-hmm. Like, that means a lot to the group, and being able to shuffle things around within game. If you do want to load up a line that has Domi up top and Marner and Nylander up top as well in the top six, you need a guy to play third line center. And, Yarncroc, this is a classic like Kerfootism. It's like, yeah, he can do it. You don't want it.
No, it's not a thing that you want. And I do wonder, Yarncroc, Liljegren, Edmondson's going to show up this week, it seems like. Thursday, it seems like the target date for him. He's not going to play tonight against the Devils, but Yarncroc and Liljegren, we were told explicitly, maybe some regular season games, but if it's regular season games, the final two against the Panthers and then the Lightning. I think it's less of a shock to the system if it's Connor Dewar, right? Because Connor Dewar is a bit player who's acquired at the deadline.
Yep. Mercenary.
And Matthew Nyes has been a healthy scratch once, I want to say, this season.
Yeah, once.
And we'll see who's actually playing in those games at the end of the year. Like, maybe it's just a mishmash of players altogether. Mm-hmm. But, it'd be quite a thing for, us to play this whole season where Matthew Nyes, I guess, had various... You can debate what kind of a first full season he's had in the NHL, but at times, he's been a big part of this team.
Man.
And to go into game one of the postseason where he's in the press box would be... Yeah, I think a shock to the system. I think it would be noteworthy, a lot more noteworthy than Connor Dewar, a guy that, again, was acquired at the deadline. He's well down the pecking order of the guys that they acquired at the deadline. But I can easily see a world where Connor Dewar is in the press box, where Matthew Nyes is like, that's more of a headline item.
Well, it's also, it'd make more sense if Yarncroc was healthy now. And you could, we're doing the experiment thing. Everybody's getting a night here. Maybe you give Bobby McMahon a night, even though he's absolutely playing in game one. But just, for appearance's sake, everybody gets their turn. And who cares what they, it's not like McMahon has some round goal total he needs to hit or something. unless I've missed it, he's not also on the precipice of 70. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the way you would do it.
And same number of goals as Matthew Nyes, though.
Yeah.
It's like 20 fewer games.
Yeah. No. If you're asking, if the decision was, if for some reason... It was like the cursed monkey's paws that I had to only have one of McMahon or Nyes in the lineup. It's an easy choice right now.
Mm-hmm.
And sorry to the Minnesota State product, Matthew Nyes, but it's not going to be, not Minnesota, just Minnesota, Golden Gopher.
Yeah.
Matthew Nyes, not going to be you. It's going to be Bobby McMahon.
Lots of decisions still to come for this Maple Leafs team. They got the Devils tonight in New Jersey. Time now for the Wake and Rake, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook, 19+. Bet responsibly. We got the Blue Jays in game two against the Mariners. Chris Bassett on the hill against George Kirby. Mariners continuing to struggle to score as they are now 4-7 on the season. The Blue Jays are slight favorites, but this is a coin flip. They're -115, Mariners -105. The total is 8, Brent.
We're going to go under again. I know the Blue Jays bats woke up yesterday. I know. But we're going to go under again. We are. I know it's not fun, but it is profitable when they hit the under tonight, inevitably. Under 8, -115. That's what you're doing when you're looking at that game.
I think I know I was with you, and it did feel like a Raptors early season thing where we just like blind under bet the Blue Jays. I think that was a huge relief for them to come through in game one of the season. I actually like the over 8 in this baseball game. Leafs, Devils, as I mentioned. New Jersey, this one, coin flip as well, as the money line has the Leafs as slight favorites, -115. Devils -105 at home, the total 6.5 here, Brent.
you know what? Let's get a little greedy. Let's go Leafs puck line -1.5. You get a +195. The Leafs are good. They have remembered this now, and they're going to choke the life out of a Devils team that is, in theory, battling for a playoff spot. They want revenge. Auston Matthews wants 70. Leafs by 1.5.
Yeah, I don't hate that. I also love the over in this thing. It's time to get Auston Matthews his cookies, I think. And yeah, the Devils are alive, but they're not really. Like, there's absolutely no chance.
More Frankenstein's monster than a devil.
Yeah, so give me over 6.5. -125. And that was the Wake and Rake presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sports book, 19+. Bet responsibly. When we come back, Ben Nicholson-Smith as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.